Welcome to the Farmers Weekly Podcast. This episode recorded on Friday, the 1st of March, 2024. From the Farmers Weekly News Desk, I'm Johan Tusker.
And I'm Sandy Kirkpatrick.
In this episode, protests escalate in Wales as farmers say government policies will destroy their livelihoods.
We find out how farmers in England are taking land out of production because wet weather and rising costs means planting crops is just too risky.
With our regular market roundup and all the latest commodity prices.
And we speak to the farmer who's raising money for Ukraine with a picture signed by two prime ministers.
The Farmers Weekly Podcast.
But first, thousands of farmers gathered in Cardiff this week to protest against Welsh Government plans for agriculture. An estimated 3,000 farmers descended on the Welsh Senedd, angry at plans which require all farmers to devote at least 10% of their land to trees, with a further 10% for wildlife habitat.
Well, it's this new SFS scheme, isn't it, and the tree planting policy and the TB policy. It's affecting every farmer in Wales, really, isn't it? And it's just too much now, and everybody's had enough, yeah.
I think we are at, as one of the slogans says, enough is enough. I think the agricultural sector has lost so much ground recently, and we've been affected in so many horrendous ways with environmental rules and all sorts, and dictatorship above us are always barking off rules about different things. And so we needed to come, I think, today, take a day off work, lose the pay, but turn up.
That's just some of the farmer voices protesting this week at government policies for agriculture in Wales.
Joined now by Farmers Weekly's Phil Case, who is at the protests in Cardiff. Phil, what was it like?
Well, Johan, the atmosphere was incredible, really. I mean, there were people that had travelled from all over Wales, from as far as North Wales, from the West, everywhere. There were thousands of farmers, but it was also people who were from the ancillary industries, from rural areas, who travelled along as well. The atmosphere at times, it was almost like a carnival atmosphere on some occasions with the music playing, but there was also a serious undertone as well. People, you could really tell by talking to them, they really feel fed up and disenfranchised by the Welsh Labour government's farming policies.
I guess that's the thing with these protests, isn't it? You want to make your point, but you want to do it in a way that keeps the general public on side.
Yes, that's absolutely right. And the protesters, or the organisers behind the protests, they were really sort of, they came together as a kind of a grassroots organisation of farmers. And they were very clear from the outset that they didn't want any kind of uprising or anything that we've seen a la, you know, the French protests. They wanted a peaceful protest, and they just wanted to make their points clearly and ensure that there wasn't any sort of violence or any sort of criminal damage or anything like that.
And I guess when you've got a protest like this, it always helps to have a high profile celebrity on board, as it were. And Nigel Owens, the former international rugby referee, he gave a speech. I understand that he was talking about to have a rugby match, you need a referee. To have food, you need farmers.
Well, exactly right. And that was really the point which stuck with me from Nigel's speech, is that he was mentioning that the Six Nations game next weekend, we've got Wales playing France. And he was saying, well, basically, if you don't have a referee, you don't have a game of rugby. And he was making the point, and it was a great analogy. Frankly, if you don't have farmers, you don't have food on people's plates.
So do you think the politicians in Wales, the government there, do you think the Welsh government are listening to farmers?
Well, I think this has been the argument all along, really. I mean, the feeling that I got speaking to farmers on the scene is that they really feel fed up with the Welsh Labour administration. They feel let down by the policies as well. But it wasn't just the three main policies that they were talking about, which they're up in arms over: NVZ regulations, bovine TB, and a lack of control of disease in the wildlife, and also, of course, the main main thrust of their angst is the sustainable farming scheme plans. They were also mentioning, for example, Welsh Labour government's proposal to move the Royal Welsh Show out of the summer and into school term, which I think really it shows that the complete lack of understanding about Welsh farming policies and the rural and rural life as well, that they mooted this idea of moving the Europe's biggest agricultural show out of the school holidays. I think it just shows really just a lack of understanding of the farming industry per se.
You can certainly see why people feel that there is that huge disconnect between the government there in Wales and what's happening on Welsh farms.
Absolutely, and I think also it's going to be very interesting to see where we go from here too, because it's a critical period. Of course, it's kind of Mark Drakeford. It's his last days in Rome, basically, and who knows who's going to be coming in next, and also what will happen to the Rural Affairs Minister Leslie Griffiths. It's rumoured that she may not keep her position in the cabinet. She's been there now for 7 years, and depending on the outcome of whoever is appointed as First Minister, it could mean that that her days are numbered.
It's a very clear message that's made the front page of this week's Farmers Weekly. Enough is enough from the farmers there. Where do you think things will go from here?
Well, the next protest that we've got coming up on the radar is the 5,500 wellies that are going to be placed on the Senate, on the doorstep of the Senate, and that's due to take place next week and around the time of the consultation closing on the 7th of March. But quite frankly, if the Welsh Government continues to stop listening, or to not listen, shall I say, to the concerns of the farming industry, it could escalate. I mean, we've already seen there's been some go slow tractor protests across some parts of Wales. But I think that we could see, bigger protests, for example. Really, you can't rule out anything, although I would say that I don't think that farmers want to disrupt the daily activities of the general public. So I doubt we will see kind of the French style protests.
And those 5,500 pairs of Wellingtons, of course, representing the 5,500 jobs that Welsh farmers say will be lost if the Welsh administration pushes ahead with this requirement for farms in Wales to devote at least 10% of their land to trees and another 10% of their land for wildlife habitats. Phil Case, thank you very much.
Hear that? That's the sound of your farm business growing. Tree planting can work hand in hand with food production, help restore nature, and you can even generate extra income. Build the future of your business, your land, and the environment with a Woodland Creation Grant and receive free expert advice to start your tree planting journey. Find out how your business can branch out. Search Woodland Creation today. Grants are for England only. Terms and conditions apply.
The Farmers Weekly Podcast.
You are listening to the Farmers Weekly Podcast. Welcome along wherever you're listening to us from. As we say every week, you can email us at podcast@fwi.co.uk. We'd love to hear from you, your news and views from the farm. Wet weather continuing, unfortunately, the wettest February since 1836 in the south of England, at least, a wetter than average month elsewhere. Many parts of southern England recording well over twice the average rainfall. That's according to the Met Office. Remarkably, it says, East Anglia had both its warmest and wettest February on record. 106.4 mils of rainfall across the month and a mean temperature of 8.2 degrees C. England as a whole recorded its fourth wettest February on record, although February 2020 was much wetter. It was also a duller than average month for much of the UK, with Wales and parts of the south of England particularly dull, although not record-breaking. Never a dull moment, though, with Farmers Weekly or the Farmers Weekly Podcast, the magazine this week. Sandy, what's caught your eye?
Couple of really nice pieces, Johan. The first one I picked up on was that Sainsbury's is the latest retailer with an online British section following the move by Morrisons and Aldi. And I think that's a really strong and good move by the retailers. We know that a lot of people support British farmers. We've seen that over the past few weeks and months, and they support and want to buy British produce. So to have that mechanism available on an online app and to highlight the fact that the food has been grown in the UK, I think that's a really good move.
It is a good move, isn't it? And it's surprising what can be done online. This is almost like an online British shelf. So you go into the supermarket in real life, as it were. You often see these sort of local produce shelves. This is something that's online that you can, if you want to buy British, you can. You don't have to sort of trawl through lots and lots of stuff. You can go to that section online and see it. And the fact that Sainsbury's is now doing this, this is really, really does bring it into the mainstream. I think they're the second biggest UK retailer behind Tesco. So the pressure, I guess, is on for Tesco to follow suit.
And I think as well, it highlights the fact that we as an industry need to work with the supermarkets. Whether you love them or loathe them, they're not going anywhere. And this isn't me letting them off the hook by any stretch of the imagination. But if we can build a relationship and where there's more positivity and we can work with them rather than against them, then hopefully we can see more of this sort of stuff coming out.
In the news section, dairy farmers are being pushed out after inspections by the Environment Agency. A sharp rise in the number of inspections nationwide has left hundreds of farmers facing enforcement action, with the dairy sector hit particularly hard. Now, consultants we've spoken to say they are seeing more farmers deciding to leave the dairy sector as a result of these on-farm inspections. And one advisor saying that several of his clients were being left with a choice of either investing hundreds of thousands of pounds into their existing businesses or selling up and retiring. And this tougher approach by the Environment Agency can be seen in the figures, with the number of farm visits rising tenfold since 2011 and almost 4,000 inspections taking place in England in the 10 months to the end of January this year. Now, dairy farmers, as we know, are particularly at risk of needing major investment on farm, with some of the most common required actions relating to clean and dirty water separation, silage clamps, lack of proper nutrient management plans, and slurry storage. And you can find out more about that on page 5 of the news section.
There's a really nice talking point on page 26, which highlights the Welsh SFS plans take a toll on farmers' mental health. And this is tying into the cover story about the Welsh farmer protest. But these are some of the unseen consequences in terms of the worry for the future and what's going to happen in the medium to long term. So really nice piece there as well, and well worth taking a look at that.
It's so, so important, isn't it? I think this is, as you say, this is something that often goes unrecognized, especially in farming communities, in small farming communities. People are often isolated. They don't have people to talk to necessarily. They don't have ways to vent their frustration. And I guess, you know, to a greater or lesser extent, Sandy, we all sort of end up internalizing it. And that isn't good for anybody in a lot of cases, because it does, as you say, take its toll.
Absolutely. And I think this is why there's such a big thing about mental health and agriculture, because you are more isolated than, say, in a built-up city or in a corporate job or in an office job. So it's really important to maintain that dialogue and to not bottle it up and go and speak to people, because, you know, all Welsh farmers are in the same boat here. They're all campaigning for a better outcome for the industry. So, really nice piece, really good points. And as I say, keep talking.
Keep talking indeed. In the business section, a flying finished lamb trade and a positive outlook for the spring will offer some confidence to sheep farmers during the next few months. Now, the deadweight lamb SQQ, as you'll hear later, averaged £7 per kilo for the week ending the 24th of February, up 37% on the same week last year. Tight supplies of lamb have left processors looking for stock, with estimated slaughter figures back by about 8% compared with this time last year to less than 200,000 head per week. And that's down to a smaller lamb crop in 2023 and poor weather slowing finishing on farm and restricting the number of hogs coming forward. You can read all about that on page 12 in the business section.
There's a lovely little piece about the oldest couple in England who met at a young farmers club. And it's a story of Ivan and Rosemary Golf, who are aged 96 and 90 respectively. And they met at a local young farmers club in Devon, I believe it was. And I think it shows the importance of, or it highlights the importance of young farmers clubs across the country. They're a very social outlet, and I'm sure a lot of people listening to the podcast will remember their days of young farmers, or probably hopefully still attend some young farmers. So a really nice piece there, and great to see that they've been married in 1946. And they talk about their times through wartime farming and their love for Land Rovers. And of course, there's advice there for the young farmer community of today.
That's fantastic, isn't it? And only on the podcast last week, we were talking in the and finally there about everybody needing a little bit of love, including farming and farmers themselves. So what a fantastic story.
There's a nice little bit if you read the article about wartime farming as well. And I think that's... very pertinent. And, the war was obviously a very difficult period, but it brought a lot of people together. So it's good to sort of reminisce and highlight the importance of farming during the wartime era.
Now, what farmers should know about nuisance complaints: disputes between farming businesses and neighbours can be long, bitter, and ultimately costly. We've got two pages of advice in the business section on the law of nuisance, whether it's people complaining about excessive noise from machinery or animals, smells from cattle silage or muck spreading, pollution of soil or waterways from the use of fertilizers or pesticides, and even encroachment onto land, for example, by mud and debris. Steps to prevent a nuisance claim, and also what you can do if one happens. That's two pages in the business section of this week's Farmers Weekly. All that and much, much more, of course. But for now, the markets. The finished steer deadweight all average this week is 497.1, down a smidge from 497.3. On the live weight, the finished steer all average is 276.5, up from 274.3 last week. Into the sheep rings, the lambs deadweight SQQ is 699.6, up from 689.9 last week. The live weight SQQ also up all the threes at 333.3 from 322.5 last week. On the arable markets, feed wheat is 158 dead, up from 151.6. Milling wheat also up 228.5 from 224.5 last week. Feed barley is up 3, 139 from 136. Oilseed rape is worth 332.6, a drop from 340.4. Feed peas are worth 230.7, and feed beans are 231.1. And our Wednesday morning ring round puts red diesel at 78.8 pence per litre, down 0.3 of a penny on the week. That's your markets for now.
The Farmers Weekly Podcast.
Now, as we heard earlier, it's been a very wet February during what's been a very wet winter, prompting some farmers to take land out of production because the wet weather and rising costs mean planting crops is just too risky. Instead, what are they doing? Well, they're putting it into the Sustainable Farming Incentive, or SFI, where at least they're guaranteed some income, come rain or shine. Well, the weather and all that goes with it was a hot topic of debate at this week's Suffolk Farming Conference held at Trinity Park, Ipswich. I went along and caught up with some of the speakers, as well as some of the farmers, including Nick Banks, partner at Scrutt & Bland Accountants.
It's going to be a tough year. Certainly in Suffolk, where we are, the weather has worked against farmers establishing crops of 24. Crops that have been drilled have been lost to rain, late establishment. All of that's at a time when commodity prices, wheat they've held over, value's fallen. It's difficult to see that many farms won't be walking into a cash flow issue. In fact, one of our speakers this morning from HSBC was challenged around banks' appetite to support those farmers. And that led on to discussion around, well, what can be done to manage that cash flow if it becomes critical. So you know, decisions around non-core assets, if they're not critical to the business, can they be sold? That led on to some discussion around some of the taxation issues. And I think also, I mean, only yesterday I was talking to one of my clients who's a contractor. And one of the landowners or farmers they contract for is considering taking 400 to 600 acres out of production for SFI, and obviously that you can understand the rationale for that thought process. But that represents a challenge to my client, who's then potentially losing the value of that contract work over that, that work. But then, you know, they've got to challenge themselves that transition to delivering a service to establish that SFI and service that SFI. And again, that they're sitting there on the back of a challenging year, on the back of the 23 result, having to make all these decisions. You know, so it's an incredibly tough time.
That is a challenge. We're hearing too that farms are coming out of production, at least for this season, this spring, going into SFI. An unintended consequence of the SFI.
I think it is. And you know, from a farm's perspective, you can make that decision to insulate yourself against the downside of growing a crop. But obviously the opportunity lost is the potential upside. And in, you know, 22, 21, 22, you saw that upside, but you shouldn't have an upside because there's global conflict, because that's very difficult to then run a sustainable business. I think the other unintended consequence of considering putting your whole farm to SFI is that, in truth, at the moment we've got, there's incredible vagueness within tax legislation. You know, the consultation was out, it's closed. The election means any clarity is going to be a political football at the moment. So, you know, it's brave of farmers to make these decisions, and they're being encouraged to make those decisions. But the government aren't backing those farms up making those decisions by giving them a fair playing field to say, well, you've made that conscious decision to go into an environment scheme for all the right reasons. But, you know, farmers doing that need to have comfort that they're not going to compromise themselves in the long term. And I think our role as advisors, you know, across the professional sector, is to just work together better to try and give those farmers the answers they need at a time when, you know, there's a lot of concern and anxiety that are they making the right decision.
That's Nick Banks of Accountants Scrotton Bland. So with spring crop management on the way, if of course it does stop raining, what are growers deciding to do? Suffolk grower James Forrest is just one farmer who's been considering his options.
I think this is probably the most difficult season I can remember in my lifetime. And I'm getting the time of life now where I have seen several seasons. We've had a difficult time with sugar beet. We're committed sugar beet growers, but we had a challenging time. In fact, we didn't send any beet into the factory at Bury St Edmunds between the 14th of October and the 18th of January. So over 3 months, the wet weather really has had a huge effect. The best conditions that we've had since then have been in January. And I mean, the heavy rain that we had in October and November and December and early January really did hinder us. But then, of course, we've had substantial rain again since then, which has put us back. But we'll get there.
Not tempted to take land out of production and put it into SFI, as some people are doing?
We have made the decision on certain fields to put SFI in. Some of the contract farms that we look after, there are areas there which are wetter in places than others, or if there's a particular black grass problem, for example, we might choose to put some SFI in there. We're working on that at the moment. The good land, the better land, the productive land where there's no issues, will continue to crop as normal, providing we can get everything in time and the weather plays ball. But it really will, you know, we've got some challenges ahead, not just, you know, the physical aspect of it, Johan, getting the crops drilled in the ground, but we've got much lower, the markets have fallen considerably over the last few weeks, which is really putting a huge pressure on it, on the whole job. And I think if ever there was a time that we needed a bit of stability and a little something to perk us up, now would be the time.
Suffolk grower James Forrest. Matthew Cobbold, a farmer-owned cooperative from Farmers, looks after 1,500 members.
It's a really interesting time for crop production, and making those assessments on gross margin and certain ambitions for businesses, which are all different. And when I look at this particular season, I think it hits a nexus of both profitability and those challenges mixed with future environmental commitments and government-based policy around that. And when looking at the crops themselves, we could be in some different positions, certainly in East Anglia in 6 weeks' time. If we get a change in weather and a change in fortune, hopefully we'll be looking historically at a very awkward and difficult winter, but with one that's got plenty of still opportunity in front of it. Other parts of the country, as I'm hearing from members, very tricky. Lincolnshire, East Midlands, certainly we're not looking at even having crop in the ground, and certain decisions as to what's available to put in or to try and even generate any income is leading people to that SFI type concept or thought process. One of the things for me within our Fram Farmers network is just trying to really assess longer term where percentages of land commitments might look like, and one question I have consistently is, what will the future of land use be? You know, we've got a demand for energy, we've got a demand for crop production, and now we've also got a commitment, albeit having been a changing one, to environmental measures, and the longer term position of that is harder to understand. Clearly in the past we had set aside at 15%. We all knew what that was. This new approach is obviously going to create a lot of different interpretations, and this spring is certainly the start of all of that.
People are still chasing spring seed. They're going to be looking at the alternative options as to what's out there, be it environmental measures or be it things like renewable energy, all of those sorts of things.
Yeah, and when you look at, you mentioned seed there, Johan, seed has been particularly tricky this year, and we'd sold almost, I think it was over 800% of our normal amount of volume by mid-November as farmers quickly pivoted within the Fram Farmers business into options that were available then, and certainly we've seen seed difficulties, seed shortages, germination problems, and early commitments to a plan have been necessary to try and navigate difficult season. So that's committing to different profit levels, different break crops, different future rotations. Cheekily, I think a lot of us will be looking at some earlier drilled propositions for 2024 autumn perhaps.
That's Matthew Cobolder, farmer and cooperative Fram Farmers, where some members at least are already looking forward to next season.
The Farmers Weekly Podcast.
And finally, a Sussex farmer is raising money for Ukraine with a picture signed by President Zelensky and UK Prime Minister Rishi Sunak. James Baird is doing it for Pickups for Peace, a charity which delivers 4x4s donated by UK farmers to the front line in Ukraine.
They had a Ukrainian cultural day at the Worthing Museum, and I saw some pictures on a wall that a 10-year-old girl had painted, Ukrainian girl, and they were of animals that were abandoned through the war. And one animal, for example, the family had been the house had been shelled the night before, and the only survivor was this dog, and the dog was called Crimea, and it died when the rescuers went to pick it up. It stayed alive long enough till the rescuers arrived. All of the children and everybody was killed. I mean, this girl, 10-year-old, painting this, it gave me a real sense of the trauma that these children are all going through, and this was her way of processing it. And she had a picture of this Patron, this little Jack Russell, very famous dog in Ukraine, explosive sniffing dog, and I wanted to buy it, and they said it's already sold, and I said, oh, that's a shame. So I messaged the girl's mother, and I got talking to her, and they agreed to do me another picture, and I said, well, I tell you what we'll do is we will get Zelensky to sign it, we'll get Sunak to sign it, and we will raise money to send more support. Sunak agreed to sign it, but only if Zelensky signed it first. So that was the more difficult signature to achieve. To get a wartime president to sign something like that, I think, is quite unusual.
James managed to get President Zelensky's signature with help from Scottish farmer and Pickups for Peace co-founder Mark Laird.
It took 2 months, and I've been out in the interim, and the last time I was there, we kind of agreed that it wasn't going to happen and we should then recover the picture and just take it back and think about a plan B. It was a ridiculous idea that we would get Zelensky to sign it. I was going to collect it genuinely when I was going back this week. I was going to go and collect it. And so I was astonished. But no, Mark Laird organized that. So he gave it to the regional governor of the Lviv district, and he was up there on business and he took it with him.
And if people want to make a donation, James, how can they do it?
They can do that through the P4P, Pickups for Peace website. These guys fighting are rural people. It's a rural nation. Lots of farmers fighting out on the front. These are brothers of ours and sisters. There's army medics fighting out there. Lots of women on the front as well. And we mustn't forget these guys are not as affluent as we might be in the UK. And any spare ability, driving vehicles, donating vehicles, cash to P4P, it goes to really good use, and it really does make a difference. I mean, I met Leonard. He came to my house, and he looked me in the eye, and he told me when he left to come to the UK, the pickup he left in had no windows. He drove for 4 hours in a pickup with no windows. He said, it's -4. He said his face was red raw. He said, you've no idea what difference it makes. And he said, when we see the British number plates, we know we're not forgotten. We know we're not doing it for nothing. We know we've got some friends out there. He said, it really does boost our morale.
That's Sussex farmer James Baird. And if you'd like to make a donation to Pickups for Peace, simply visit pickupsforpeace.co.uk, where you'll be able to do so. And you'll be able also to find out more about the charity. So, Sandy, it's going to raise money for charity, all for a good cause. I actually met James Baird, myself, the farmer, involved in this. Very, very passionate about helping the people of Ukraine. He's hosting Ukrainian families himself on the family farm, and also delivering pickups of peace for the charity there in Ukraine. So, more power to his elbow.
I love little stories like this, Johan, and I think it's particularly pertinent on these just after the second anniversary of the war starting in Ukraine, and the number of farmers and the scale of farming in Ukraine, which I, to be honest, wasn't aware of until the war started, and the impacts of sort of global grain trade and everything else. So, yeah, it is really nice to see support. I think we should try and support Ukrainians in whatever way we can, a really nice little piece, and hopefully a bit of a morale boost as well for those in Ukraine.
And farmers, I think the world over face similar challenges, but none so much as the challenges that are being faced by farmers in Ukraine at the moment. And we wish them well. And like you say, on the second anniversary of the conflict and the war in Ukraine, we can only hope that it is resolved sooner rather than later. That's it for this episode of the Farmers Weekly podcast. Thank you for listening. Do join us again next week. We'll have more news and views, and hopefully another uplifting and finally story. But for now, I'm Johan Tasker. Goodbye.
And I'm Sandy Kirkpatrick. Goodbye.